Truthspresso, Episode 6.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truthspresso with Daniel Minnick.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Truthspresso. This is Daniel Minnick. In this episode, we are going to talk about something rather unsettling. I'm titling this episode, The Law School Trap. Now, there are many different traps in life. There are many different traps in any endeavor of education, but in particular, I would like to address something that I am going to call the law school trap. There are many aspiring young people who end up going into law school, but they find out that it's not all that it's cracked up to be, and find out that it's even worse at the other end after graduating than if they had decided never to go to law school at all. So I'm going to look at an article from The Balance. This is from TheBalance.com, and the article is entitled Average Law School Debt. So according to The Balance, the average law school debt is about $100,000 to $200,000. Now, remember, this is for law school itself. This is not the debt that is for any undergraduate or bachelor's degree prior to going to law school. And there are many young people who end up going into law school after graduating with their bachelor's degree because of very bad advice. And in the process, they add this $100,000 to $200,000 of school loan debt to the already existing school loan debt that they have from their undergraduate degree. Now, according to The Balance, this $100,000 to $200,000 in debt that is accumulated from law school has more than doubled over 10 years. By that, the article means that the actual cost of going to law school itself has more than doubled over just the last decade. Well, why would that be? I mean, has a law school actually become twice as valuable in only 10 short years? Well, I would like to say that on the contrary, it has actually become much less valuable over those 10 years. But why would I say that? I mean, how would it make much economic sense for something to end up costing twice as much, but actually be much less valuable? Why would that make any sense at all? I mean, consider this. Even our litigious society doesn't need anywhere near the number of lawyers that the supply of law school graduates would provide if all of them were employed. Consider that if they were all employed, how much lower would be the pay from winning court costs? So lawyers should be cheaper if we have more lawyers, but it seems that the cost of litigation grows over time as well. So if the cost of litigation grows over time, yet the cost of a law degree grows over time, and yet there's lots of people who graduate in law, what does that mean for many of the people who graduate in law? Are they the ones making some of this money from court cases? Hardly. Consider that if all of these law graduates were employed, how hard would it be for them all to pay back their inordinately high school debts? So do these econometrics make much sense given the way supply and demand should drive down the value and hence the cost of a law degree? Or at least result in much fewer students going to law school if it costs so much? So let's think about this a little bit. Let's ask ourselves the question, why are the costs of law school going up? Well, if more and more students end up going into law school, that drives up the demand for a law degree, and then the demand for law degree allows the law schools to charge more money for a law degree. Another factor to consider along this line of thinking is the factor of unemployment statistics. According to Above the Law, this is another website I'm bringing in, abovethelaw.com, there was an article this year, 2019, February, called Understanding the Law School Graduate Underemployment Problem. According to Above the Law, 17% of law graduates are underemployed. Now, what does it mean by underemployed? I've heard of unemployed, right? But what does underemployed mean? The definition of underemployed could include unemployed, or it could also include working part-time or maybe working even a full-time job, but this is meant to be a temporary job that is unrelated to the career in question and while seeking a career-related job. So if we have such high unemployment statistics, then why are there so many people going into law still? So why would there be all this demand to go into law school? Well, another website that I checked out to try to figure this out might give us a clue as to what in the world is going on with this law school bubble, as some experts have termed this. This website is collegeconsensus.com, and on collegeconsensus.com, there is an article entitled 10 Best Degrees for Getting into Law School. Now, I don't believe that this particular article is actually making a case against law school. I don't think this article really sees what I am about to show you as a conclusion from what this article shows us, but it really leaves you scratching your head. It's one of those things that make you go, So let's jump into this article, 10 Best Degrees for Getting into Law School. So if you're thinking of someone who would go into law school, what degree might you think that they would normally have for an undergraduate degree? I mean, if you need to have a college degree before going into law school, at least most likely, wouldn't the first degree you would think of that would come to your mind would be pre-law? I mean, isn't that the undergraduate degree that is crafted specifically to be the prerequisite to go into law school? Well, according to this article, pre-law does not show up in any of the top 10. What's another possibility? Think law enforcement. Think of someone getting a criminal justice degree. And with criminal justice, or maybe even criminology, studying the mind of criminals, if you're not planning to be a police officer, which, you ask police officers, they might tell you that criminal justice is actually not the best degree to get to become a police officer. But say you get a degree in criminal justice and you would think that would be one of the top degrees one would get to plan to go into law school, but that is not one of the top. So let's look at the top degree for going into law school. Number one, history. History? Yes, history. I mean, wouldn't getting a degree in history be something that you might do if you want to, say, teach history in school? Well, think about how many people get a degree in history versus getting a degree in, say, mechanical engineering. So, some people like history, and so they figure, well, if I'm going to go get a college degree, why don't I make it a subject I love? Why don't I make it history? So you get a degree in history, and then you're trying to figure out a good school to teach in, and you're competing with a lot of other history graduates in the process, and you have a hard time landing a full-time teaching job at a school teaching history. So then someone advises you that history is a good major to go into law school, and you figure, why not? If I can't succeed as a professional history teacher, as a history professor, maybe I should use that to go into law school and become a lawyer. Now, lawyers are paid a lot of money, right? So history, as unlikely as it may seem, is the top degree for going into law school. Number two is business. So think about the supply of business degree graduates. They go and take college courses talking about business practices, but yet they have a hard time competing with other business graduates for a degree, for a job in, say, being the manager of a company. And so as they're struggling trying to find a good job to pay off their business degree loan, they're advised that business is a good degree to go into law school. And, you know, we see the same similarity. Let's go to number three and the degree in English. So if someone gets a degree in English and does not realize that there are not many jobs that just pay them to English as a verb, and they can't find, they're not really editing material, they don't feel like proofreading and editing everyone's articles or books or something like that, they didn't really think it through, and now they're trying to find a good job to use their English degree for, so they end up going into law school. So how about philosophy? So philosophy, it would seem to be one of those quintessential, you know, sort of useless college degrees. You get a degree in philosophy and you realize that no one paid Aristotle or Plato or Socrates a livable or even decent salary just to be a philosopher. And so you can't be paid to be the 21st century Aristotle. So you get the advice that philosophy is an excellent degree to go into law school. So political science is number five, according to college consensus. And, you know, why not? I mean, if you can't just get elected to be a congressperson, you don't have enough money to do that, to compete against the successful business people who have politicians in their back pocket, and that they run for office and they become the politicians. You're a fresh political science graduate and you have no money to actually put into practice and become a politician, and so you get the advice, you're told that political science is an excellent degree to go into law school, and so you make that sacrifice and go into law school. And next is economics. Now, you get a degree in economics, and you can't become a good economics professor. This is another situation where the supply of graduates in economics exceeds the demand for being professors of economics, and you can't really just economize your economics degree. And so you follow the advice of an academic advisor and you go get a degree in law. So arts and humanities, number seven, here we go again. What do you do with arts and humanities? Well, bet you didn't know this, college graduate. If you can't figure out what to do with arts and humanities, well then go to law school. And number eight, psychology, similar thing to philosophy. You study the mind. It seemed like a great degree, but instead of having to go get your PhD to become a licensed practicing psychologist, you go to law school. It's only 3 more years, and now you're set. I guess, you know, your degree in psychology will help you to be an excellent lawyer. Number 9, math. Well, maybe I think what we're talking about here is a generic math degree, not applied math, not actuarial science, not math as it's used in computer science or engineering. It's just plain abstract math. Well, what do you do with that? You might, if you try hard enough, find a job being a source of mathematical algorithms for software programming, but you get the advice to go into law. Now, let's take number 10, science. You know, this seems like, it's talking about more degrees that we're not talking about chemical engineering here. We're talking about something like biology or chemistry, something that's a lot of hard studying in science, but it's not really something that actually has practical use. Like instead of majoring in chemical engineering, you major in chemistry and you realize that you're not going to be paid to be a chemist unless you're actually going to engineer products. And so now you're told that chemistry is, and you know, other generic science degrees are good candidates for going into law school. So as we mentioned, everything here under the sun in arts and humanities and things that have to do with education and economics and psychology and so on, but no pre-law or criminal justice are in the top 10. So sounds like a trap in the making. So, if we recall in episode 2, I mentioned employability problems with various liberal arts majors. Episode 5, I kind of provided a little bit of a solution for this dilemma. Episode 5, I mentioned career tips for liberal arts graduates, and one of those tips was not to go to law school and take on even more debt for a career that you never actually anticipated pursuing. Now let's look at an example of someone who actually did go to law school. From the New York Times, we have a June 19th, 2016 article entitled "An Expensive Law Degree and No Place to Use It." And our case in point is an attorney by the name of John Acosta. John Acosta was a successful graduate of a prestigious law school, and he managed to partner with a prosecutor who had been practicing for a long time. So it seems, according to any account, John Acosta is actually living the dream. He is successful. He is actually going to practice as a lawyer. Not all law graduates actually get this opportunity. And he managed to partner with someone who had been in this business for quite a while. And not all veteran attorneys are willing to do that. So, according to all accounts, John Acosta is the successful lawyer. But in the process of going to law school, John Acosta acquired $200,000 of debt that will likely hang like the sword of Damocles over his head unless he hits the legal jackpot in his practice. John Acosta was a police officer, but for some reason he got tired of being a police officer and decided to go into something more glamorous like law. But now he's going to have to pay a huge student loan debt that he would not have had to pay being an unglamorous police officer. So we've just looked at a case of John Acosta who has to pay off an expensive law degree. Now, let's crack open the storybooks. I'm going to give you an imaginary but not unrealistic scenario. We're going to look at the fictional character Joe Bumpkin. So Mr. Bumpkin walks the stage at his high school graduation, and he has been fed a steady diet of propaganda. This propaganda I mentioned in episode 2, the propaganda, includes such catchphrases as "follow your passion and the money will follow." But, of course, in the case that we're going to look at with Mr. Bumpkin, it will actually follow the universities, not Mr. Bumpkin. Other catchphrases like "college is your ticket to success" and "everyone has a right to a good college education." So drugged on institutional euphoria, Joe flips through some catalogs for his state's community colleges and universities, as well as some Ivy League schools. In those short 3 summer months, Joe isn't sure what he wants to major in, but that's fine, right? I mean, that's why there are all these majors in the catalogs. Something is bound to be a good match. Joe decides that philosophy might be good enough. Although he never dreamed about a career in philosophy as a kid, it sounded interesting enough now. As images of being the next Aristotle of the 21st century danced in his head, Joe psyched himself out for his renewed path in life. So let's shift forward 4 years. Joe graduated in the top 10% of his class at a state university, but the shock of reality was about to set in. That glimmering smile donning a black gown and cap, complementing a sense of accomplishment for hard work and a job well done, quickly led to looks on his face like a deer in the headlights. "Why aren't recruiters calling me?" he thinks to himself. Joe tailored his resume and applied for a dozen office jobs over 6 months that should reflect the pay of a proper college graduate. Yet every semi-comfortable, semi-managerial, semi-decently paid job seems to get taken by candidates who have more training and skills in that respective area. So, dejected, Joe walks back to his car from every interview to see "now hiring" signs displayed on the window of every Starbucks, Walmart, Target, and fast food joint. Realizing that his $80,000 of student loan payments will not wait until he lands a dream job, Joe considers a job as a barista at Starbucks. Well, hey, at least it's better than flipping burgers. Yet, before he lands this job, an academic advisor from the university returns a call of inquiry and suggests that going to law school is a good option for someone in his situation. The advisor lets him know that his loan payments can be deferred until he graduates law school. More school? More debt? Well, Joe thinks about this for a minute before he remembers that, quote, "doctors and lawyers are where the money is at." He could work at Starbucks and painfully try to pay off his loan for over 20 years, or he could go to law school, become a prestigious lawyer, and pay off a larger loan in 5 years, maybe. I mean, Joe actually didn't calculate it out, but sounds like a good deal. Also, Joe would be helping the downtrodden in the process. Sounds like a win-win situation. So Joe gathers up his mental acumen and prepares to go to law school. Now, let's fast forward 3 more years, and after graduating, after more grueling schooling, Joe finally graduates law school. And then, right after graduating, Joe, exhaustedly, vigorously for months afterward, manages to pass the bar exam for the first time. So now, Joe stands exhausted from nearly 20 years of virtuously non-stop schooling. Joe is finally ready to turn all that classroom time into a life career. Except now, Joe has added a whopping $160,000 in more student loan debt to his $80,000, making for a heavy $240,000 in loan principal that has already been accruing interest over the past 7 years. Yet more euphoria is crushed into ever finer powder as Joe fails to find existing attorneys willing to partner with a fresh debt-laden law graduate. Joe finds a few openings for a low-paying paralegal position, and even then these have candidates circling around them like vultures. In the midst of this rubble of hard work, crushed dreams, and monumental debt, that position to work as a barista at Starbucks calls Joe's name. Throwing in the towel, Mr. Bumpkin succumbs to the proposition and thinks, "At least I can get some free coffee in the process." Joe now works a job that he could have done fresh out of high school, but It's not just that. He is now older than he was graduating out of high school. He is worn out, and he realizes that he will likely make payments on that massive student loan for the rest of his life. He doesn't have the skills now to jump right into a high-paying job. Everything has been a battle, and everything has a lot of competition. His paycheck is just enough to cover the loan payment and essential expenditures for himself. He has no hope of starting and supporting a family, and that was part of his dream as a child. He has no bright future outlook for retirement. If he lived like a beggar on his paycheck, he might be able to cough up $20 into savings every month, but that $20 of savings every month gets eaten up any time he gets sick, and he has to pay that toward the deductible on his health insurance plan. Joe researches student loan forgiveness and discovers a little silver lining that he can get the loan forgiven after 20 years of making payments. The problem is that the remaining amount counts as taxable income. So he still actually has to pay a lot of money on his loan, and a lot of tax money to the IRS. Still, if anything unexpectedly bad happens, Joe's student loan takes top priority. He discovers that it's not dischargeable in bankruptcy. The creditors that own his loan can garnish his wages and any windfall he may get. Even his Social Security can get hit to pay the loan. So what do we make of Joe Bumpkin now? Joe is now an indentured servant. The fact that the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution makes, quote-unquote, involuntary servitude illegal does not seem to matter to Joe. He knows from law school that this servitude is voluntary, so to speak, because he chose to go to college and law school. He chose because he trusted the advice of his high school teachers and college academic advisors. They were his educators. Why shouldn't he have trusted them? Even Joe's parents told him that he needed a good college education if he wanted to be somebody. Well, now here he is. He is indeed somebody. But he is truly only somebody. He is not happy. All the energy of his youth is being wasted first by years of senseless schooling and then by dead-end labor. But who is happy in this arrangement? The schools are certainly happy. They are getting paid high tuitions and grant money to teach this kind of stuff. The banks are certainly happy. They are getting paid by the government to finance student loans that otherwise would not be offered. And they're collecting lots of interest because Joe can't save up enough money and make large enough payments to reduce his interest payments. The government politicians are happy because many young people believe the propaganda and vote for the promise of college opportunity and following dreams. So, here's a little bit of advice from this rather unsettling story. Avoid the propaganda and avoid the law school trap.
Thank you for waking up with Truthspresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truthspresso, I would appreciate it if you would rate it on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.